It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning and welcome to May. This is Charlie Potter, your host of the Great Outdoors show on WGN Radio, which we affectionately call the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America. Last week, I talked a bit about the Everglades, and I lit a fire under many of you who sent me comments or called me. And so I thought I would build upon that briefly at the beginning of this show to talk about really what's going on in the Everglades, which affects so many of us here in Illinois and around the country, as Florida has become the number one tourist destination state in North America. So let me just give you a number that you're going to be absolutely shocked at. I'll start off by saying this. Over 2 million acres, or roughly 3,125 square miles, over 3,000 square miles of Florida has been drained that was once wetlands and water that went south to the Everglades. This past week in Forbes magazine, Chris Dorsey wrote a very good piece about the Everglades. And building on what I talked about last week and what others have been talking about, there is now a huge movement to actually try to stem the loss and save the Everglades. This has been being talked about for the past 50, 75 years. It took Governor Ron DeSantis and his leadership to actually make this happen. Long ago, the governor of Florida in the 1960s, Claude Kirk, 1960-1970, he was in the governor's office. He began the effort, along with Nathaniel Reed, to begin to raise the awareness of what was going on in the Everglades and to save the Everglades. So since 1970 to now, there's been a lot of talk. There's been some action. Meanwhile, the Everglades has continued to die. And it is, as I'm talking to you right now on the show, it is dying. It is being starved of the one thing it needs, water. Since Governor Ron DeSantis became governor, he has raised and appropriated $6.5 billion towards saving the Everglades, $500 million alone this year. There is no governor in the United States of America that is doing more for conservation than Ron DeSantis is in Florida. He is absolutely and correctly being hailed as Florida's conservation governor, and he's showing the way across the country, actually, and this is, as you know, I do not do politics on this show, but what Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida to save the Everglades is unheard of. And no governor has tried as hard since Claude Kirk in 1970, who didn't have the money. DeSantis not only has the money, he has the political will to do it. But think about this. Over 2 million acres, 3,000 square miles has been drained. The Everglades in size, itself in size, is 2,400 square miles. So an area larger than the size of the Everglades has been drained in Florida, almost all of it since World War II. So the Everglades stands at 2,400 square miles. 3,000 square miles have been drained. To put it in context, the Great Salt Lake, of which hundreds of millions, billions of dollars are being spent to save, the Great Salt Lake is 1,800 square miles. The Everglade is that much bigger, 600 square miles larger than the Great Salt Lake. But here are some numbers to explain why this is happening. A few years ago, red tide, algae blooms, fish kills, toxic air, swimming bans. We had an ecological, political, and economic absolute disaster taking place in Florida. And Governor DeSantis came in when he was elected and said, we've got a tourist industry. And if you can believe this number, it is so astounding. We have a tourist industry that brings over 143 million people a year to Florida. And that entire industry is at risk. If we can't swim in our oceans, if we can't sit on our beach because of the toxic air from the red tide and the algae bloom, and if the Everglades goes away, much of Florida's 143 million visitors go away. I'm going to put this in context for a moment. In 1950, Florida had 4.7 million, so call it 5 million people visited Florida in 1950. Last year, 143 million. That's 35 times So for every person in Florida visiting in 1950, there are more than 35 people visiting today. If you want to look at the numbers, which I talked about last week, this is the problem with the Everglades is it's an ecological plumbing problem because the Corps of Engineers has spent much of the last century, along with private developers in the state, trying to drain the Everglades, and they've done an awfully good job. But by the numbers, as I mentioned last week, 500 people lived in Miami-Dade County in 1900. 500,000 lived there in 1950. 3 million people live there now. Florida alone, in 1900, there were a total of 500,000 people in the entire state. In 1950, there were 2.7 million people. Now there are 24 million people that live in Florida. And on top of that, you put 143 million people into the state, mostly in the winter. And you wonder why we have an absolute ecological disaster in the most important marshland in perhaps all the world. It rivals the Okavango. It rivals the Louisiana Gulf Coast. The Everglades is Florida's treasure. It's America's marsh. And you're putting almost 150 million people a year into the state of Florida that use the water and use the natural resources. On top of that, the sugar industry is a 400,000-acre industry in Florida, of which U.S. Sugar owns 250,000 acres of the 400,000 acres, and all of that is reclaimed wetlands. You're not going to displace sugar from the Florida economy. It's the single largest agricultural crop. Big sugar, as it's affectionately called or not affectionately called, depending on how you look at it. That 400,000 acres of drained land, mostly around the south end of Lake Okeechobee, is the biggest reason that the Everglades does not get the water it needs, and is the reason that so many toxins are in the water and air moving out to the oceans through the big canals that go to the east of the Atlantic, and then to the Loxahatchee to the east, and then go to the west north of Naples. Those canals were designed to drain the Everglades. They've done an incredible job. So building on what I said last week, the Everglades can be saved. It's a monumental effort, $6.5 billion, and that's not even going to do the job alone. But the Everglades cannot be saved unless the sugar industry and the agricultural industry and the tourism industry and the conservation industry can come together. You cannot have 400,000 acres being drained and intensively farmed to grow sugar and not expect to have the kind of ecological and environmental disasters that South Florida is now taking. The building of reservoirs alone, which is the biggest part of the plan, the closing of canals, the idea of sending more water and clean water to the Everglades is a great plan. But if you still have a factory of 400,000 acres to your north that is taking a lot of the water, and then because of the way sugar is farmed, adding a lot of pollutants to the water, you have this toxic mix which is occurring. But there is definitely no solution to the Everglades unless the sugar industry and the tourism industry and the conservation industry all come together. So lots of people want to just stop all sugar production in Florida. That's not going to happen from a realistic point of view. But there are ways for sugar and conservation to work together, and Governor DeSantis is leading the way. And I think as I leave the Everglades now until we talk more about it, it's at a time of crisis. It has been slowly being drained, starved of the water it needs. And now in recent years, due to the incredible onslaught of people, that has only exacerbated and grown so much worse. So 25 years from now, unless something is done, the Everglades is gone. And when the Everglades is gone, we have an environmental catastrophe on a scale that does rival if the Great Salt Lake is gone. In fact, it will put much of South Florida on fire every year. And obviously we've lost so much fish and wildlife that we can't even begin to measure. So there are three or four major environmental concerns in America that really have to be solved in the next few years. The Everglades is front and center, and the efforts by Governor DeSantis and the Everglades Foundation, and particularly the Everglades Foundation, has been spectacular in the conservation world. And Governor DeSantis on the government side, working now with the U.S. Congress, and working with the sugar industry and agricultural interests, there, I sit here this morning telling you there really is hope for the Everglades. The private sector is involved, the government sector is involved, the agricultural sector is involved, tourism is involved. All this attention on saving the Everglades can be saved, but it is on a clock, it's going fast, and it needs to happen quickly. So with that said, the 143 million people coming to Florida every winter, if the straws keep going in the ground and the water keeps being diverted for that and for agricultural uses, we got a big hill to climb. But I'm confident with the leadership that's taking place now in the Everglades Foundation, others in the conservation arena, as well as what's taking place in the governor's office in Florida, there's a chance that we'll continue to enjoy the Everglades for a long time, but we have to act very quickly. I'll be back with much more on the Great Outdoors Show. When I do, I actually have an incredible story about the National Environmental Protection Act, which has unintended consequences that border on the, well, they border on the absurd. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsor, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealer.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Moving from the wetlands and the swamps of the Everglades, moving to the Bureau of Land Management and what is taking place in the arid America West, two ecosystems that could not be possibly far more further removed. The Everglades, of course, needs all the water it can get. It's being starved of water. The American West always needs more water. But in this case, I'm talking about the Bureau of Land Management and what is happening with the advancement of ATVs, all-terrain vehicles, off-road motorcycles, and UTVs, utilitarian vehicles, and the BLM and the National Environmental Protection Act called NEPA. So back in the 70s, NEPA was created to try to stop the degradation of our natural resources. It has ended up causing unintended consequences. And in the American West, it is living proof now of what needs to be done to quickly change and update these laws. So ATVs, off-road vehicles, didn't exist when NEPA was passed. NEPA's design is to stop ecological damage and also to stop cultural damage. It's under the Antiquities Act. You can't go and dig in public lands without first having an assessment of archaeological significance and cultural heritage significance across the American West. Obviously, Native Americans lived in lots of places, and they had burial grounds, and they had religious areas. And a lot of that is on BLM, Bureau of Land Management lands. So now that you have your ATV, and it's long been said, you know, you buy an ATV and you drive out of the store with it on your trailer, and where are you going to go use it? Well, you're going to go use it on public lands. Public lands were not designed for these kind of uses. If you fly over the American West today, it's a sickening sight. It looks like Swiss cheese. The ground is scarred, and it's scarred for hundreds of years to come. You can still see the tracks from the Oregon Trail, from the wagons over 150 years ago that crossed the American West, headed to the west. You can still see the ruts in the ground, not only from the air, but on the ground. And now we have nobody has any idea how many hundreds of thousands, maybe million miles of trails that have been created by individuals like us. We got on an ATV, we got on an off-road motorcycle, and we just simply took off. And we just went wherever we wanted. And when we did, that footprint on the ground, somebody followed us, the next person followed us, next thing you know, you have a trail through sagebrush. And the American West from the air looks like it's just been carved up in an incomprehensible manner of tire tracks. All of this is 100% illegal. It's against the law. You are not allowed to drive a motorized vehicle on Bureau of Land Management lands unless you are on a designated trail. Well, the number of designated trails versus the number of trails that's been created, there are so few designated trails, and there is this incredible number of trails that people have just created on their own. So what is the BLM solution? They need to fence off areas where trails are being created to stop people from accessing areas that they're not supposed to. Here comes the problem. In order to drive a fence post, and think about a metal fence post, it has a diameter of about 2 inches, and they're spaced about 10 to 12 feet apart. You have to have a NEPA permit. Somebody has to go out from the government and survey the land to make sure where you're putting that fence post is not an archaeological site of significance. We are talking about the need to fence thousands and thousands of miles of trails. And before any of that can be done, they have to survey all of it to make sure that a fence post isn't going to go into a place where there is some important archaeological site. And yet these lands are the same lands. You go across the fence on private lands, and all the fence posts can be put in that want to be put in. So the BLM cannot even drive a fence post in the ground in the middle of the trail to say, this trail is closed. It is not a trail. They are paralyzed, and they are paralyzed under the overreach. Nobody thought about these consequences. When the National Environmental Protection Act was put in, NEPA, nobody thought about fence posts, and yet somehow it got covered. You can go and you can pile rocks on top of the ground to block a trail, which is expensive, and you got to go get the rocks, but you cannot drive a fence post into the ground. So we have a situation, and it's current, and it's really important now that this gets resolved. There are more and more and more recreational vehicle uses now on public lands than there ever have been, and it's growing exponentially each year as more and more people visit the American West. The Bureau of Land Management is completely overwhelmed by this. Ranchers are trying to work with the Bureau of Land Management to stop these trails from being put in, and they can't do it. We are paralyzed, and we're paralyzed because of the bureaucracy that was set up with an unintended consequence. So this is one of the things that is right in front of us right now. If we can't fix this, we're going to lose a lot of the American West forever. It's going to be scarred with tire tracks that will last for hundreds of years. Let's hope we can get it fixed. It's not a complicated fix. It just simply is a matter of the BLM being able to change a rule to allow for fence posts and blockages to be put up without a NEPA Act review. So that's it for the Great Outdoors this morning. We've gone from the swamps of Florida to the arid West. I'll be back with much more on the Great Outdoors next week. Hope you have a great week in the Great Outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.